Hello, welcome to this podcast from the Business Marketing Club, or BMC. I'm Dave Stevens, I'm a business marketer, and I'm chair and co-founder of the BMC. The Business Marketing Club is a not-for-profit community network of business marketing professionals and people interested in business marketing. It's run by business marketers for business marketers, and we provide face-to-face and virtual event meetups, training, podcasts, blogs, newsletters, mentoring, social media groups, community groups, and gatherings for business marketers. And today we have over 1,000 participants around the world. If this is the first time you've joined us, you're very welcome. Check us out at businessmarketingclub.org.uk. If you've been with us before, though, welcome back. It's good to have you along again. In this episode, I'll be talking about demand generation to business development manager at Sharper B2B Marketing, Michael Brazier, to chief marketing officer of Future Anthem, Mitchell Feldman, to the director of marketing at Casey and Architecture Design and Planning, Lisa Higgins, and to CEO and founder of Radiate B2B, Riaz Kanani. Lots to cover, so let's get started. Today, we continue our A to Z of business marketing. We're looking to give a primer on the very latest thinking, practices, and practical examples on every big topic in B2B land. And we've reached G. G stands for demand generation. And we've got four experts talking today on the topic, starting with business development manager at Sharper B2B Marketing, Michael Brazier. Michael, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Hi, Dave. I'm a big fan of the BMC and of the podcast. So thank you very much for inviting me along. I'm really happy to be here.
It's good to have you here.
Ah, great. Excellent. Well, so I've been working in B2B marketing for just over 20 years now. And 10 of those have been circling around and focused on demand generation. So I'm really hoping that I can share some findings with the listenership. So I think probably a good place to start is, what is demand generation? And when you asked me to come on this and talk about it, I kind of did I went back and looked at things and you know, how I got here. And it's one of those things where everybody seems to have a different opinion on what demand generation is, which, given how commonly it's used as a term in the industry and when we talk at B2B events, I was quite surprised by that, because I always have my version. You go into a room of 10 B2B marketing professionals and you're going to get 10 different answers when you ask them what demand generation is about. But I think one thing we all agree on is that demand generation is about creating demand, unsurprisingly, for your product or service to feed your pipeline or funnel. I think you can scratch below the surface of that. That's the common bit that we seem to agree on. And then you start to get a divergence of opinions on how it's put together and how it all works. But essentially, that's a starting point. I like to expand on this. I believe it's about creating highly targeted awareness of a need within a clearly defined segment where you then introduce your proposition to create engagement with your audience and to prepare them to take action. So a little bit additional information there, but that's how I see things. So where does demand generation sit in your marketing strategy? And I always think of demand generation as sitting between general awareness, brand awareness, and lead generation. It occupies this spot. And I think it's fair enough to say that there's a little bit of grey area between those. Whenever you speak or hear people talk about demand generation, it's used quite interchangeably between awareness and lead generation and demand generation. But for me, it's setting the scene before you introduce a lead generation campaign to convert all that demand that you've generated into leads. So that's where I think it sits. I feel that the way that we all put it together, how a demand generation campaign is created and put into place, that's where a lot of things start to get differently. And you know, you can read a lot of books about this. There's plenty of information on the internet, and you can talk to a lot of your peers, and you'll find that everybody has their own way of doing it. I've got more of what I would call a framework approach to how I put together demand generation campaigns. I always start with alignment, and the purpose is you're trying to identify a specific need within a very specific target audience, but you also need to have the product and service and your proposition to align correctly to that need that you've identified. And in the roles that I've had, I've spent a fair amount of time going back between the business who have a product and service that looks like this and identifying what the target need is within that market and finding the alignment, because there's no point in creating a huge amount of demand and then the product and service doesn't deliver on that or it doesn't meet that demand. So aligning there, also alignment in terms of marketing and sales, getting those talking and on the same page. And in terms of whatever campaign that you're doing in terms of demand generation, it has to fit and align with the brand and what the business is as a whole. It's got to be consistent. So the next level down is the plan. How are you going to execute this? And what are the outcomes that you want? So you're looking at what your objectives are, and you can trace that back in terms of a financial outcome. But then you have to have an idea on what you're trying to achieve from each demand generation campaign or your demand generation program overall. Content plan that you're going to put together, what content do you need? How often, the frequency, what's that going to look like? And that can be a blend of a whole range of things. And I think the main trend that I'm seeing at the moment and what seems to be working really well in terms of demand generation is the prevalence of video and social media for the B2B market. I think that's come on leaps and bounds. For the part, you know, when I look at what we're doing today versus what we were doing 10 years ago as B2B professionals, you know, we were looking at PR and blogs and articles and the old traditional ways on a digital platform. Now, video streaming, the integration with social media, the ability to tell stories via Facebook and Instagram, which have infiltrated the B2B space, it's changed the game. And even over the last 12 months, you would have seen events as being a big part of a demand generation program. Of course, that's been blown out the water now and everybody's moved it online. So the game's changed, it's constantly evolving. The idea of what it is changing as we go along, and we should be comfortable with that as B2B professionals. And then the last bit is about connection. Whatever you're doing, you've got a very short amount of time to capture someone's attention, because this is up towards the top of the funnel. This is the beginning of the customer experience. So you're not got that engagement with them yet. So how can you connect with them really, really well? What I've seen is the use of emotional context is working really well. And that ties into the video and the social feeds. It all works really nicely together. You want to kind of hook them in. You've got that one little chance to get them. I was flicking through my Instagram feed this morning, just in preparation for this. A little video played. In 15 seconds, they presented what is a complex solution and a very simple problem. And I nailed it entirely. It used humor in it. It was funny. I followed the rabbit hole. I followed it through. It all worked nicely. And then it kind of gave me additional information on the product and its capabilities as you went along. So it engaged me and it connected with me and it kind of warmed me up to the point where I was going to take action. And then you have to be ready to take action when that, when the customer or the prospect really wants that. You know, you can be too pushy, but I think in terms of demand generation, it's about that readiness to respond. So I have thought about a couple of really nice little examples that I thought I'd share with campaigns, which I feel work really well. The first one is the Panasonic ChocBook. So this was a spoof product launch from Panasonic ToughBook. This was in the build-up to Easter. And it was, there was humor behind it and it got everybody involved. Essentially, it was a big chunk of chocolate. Panasonic are known for their rugged ToughBooks and indestructible laptops. And it just fitted really nicely that you had this chunky piece of chocolate. So they product tested it. We had the CMO doing product testing in his car using TikTok, I think. And they were doing all sorts of things like how long it would last in a car heater and all these different things. It was done on social media through organic and granular targeted social paid as well. And there was some email that went in the background with that. And the result was 2 weeks, 400 of these personalized chocbooks were shipped within that period. So that's a good result. And then the other one that I wanted to introduce was Reward Gateway, an HR tech business. This was the end of last year. Everybody was working from home. The big issue that employees were facing were employees working from home. How do you keep them engaged keep them as part of the culture? And they have a great product. They run this event every single year, but they flipped it online very quickly. I received notifications on email, via social, and I got a salesperson contacting me, which is obviously they've got their salespeople aligned. You signed up for the event, you got a whole marketing pack so you could share that yourself as a participant and say that you were attending and invite more people. Attended the event, it ran super slick. You had customers of the service showing how they were using it to engage their employees working from home. And it just worked perfectly. And the follow-up was impeccable too. So two great examples of really fantastic campaigns. And if we can take something from that, I think it'll be great.
I think we can. Michael Brazier, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dave. It's great to be here.
Our next demand generation expert is Chief Marketing Officer of Future Anthem, Mitchell Feldman. Mitchell, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Hey, Dave. Thanks for having me. So an exciting topic, really exciting topic, and something near and dear to my heart, demand generation. And, you know, I sit on the board of a number of technology companies. So, and all of them come to me with the same question is, we got great products, we got great services. How do we reach our market? And typically, that all starts with, who are we selling to? What is our TAM, our total addressable market? And more often than not, I'm greeted with a puzzled face because people haven't really considered what that is. My first point of call is really validating who they're talking to. And we use a number of tools, so things like LinkedIn, particularly LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a great tool to really understand the size of the market, to understand the geographies, the industries that we're talking to, how many people are within that sector that we talk to, because as you know, when you're selling into a company, you've got your decision makers, you've got your influencers, you've got your researchers, and all of those are an important component of getting to that sale, or what we would call that lead to cash, that revenue. So the first thing that I would do in any business is look at who are we selling to. defining that audience and really getting to a point where we know exactly how many people we can talk to. You know, if I look at one business, which is very near and dear to my heart, a company called Future Anthem, you know, we look after the gambling and casino sector, and our markets are operators, aka casinos, and also the studios, the people that write the games. We know that within our addressable market within the UK is about 1,024 companies. And within those, we've got about six different personas. So we've got about 7,000 people. So we know who we're talking to. We know the size of the market. We also spend a lot of time understanding what are their pains, gains, and jobs to be done. Because if we are going to be successful in marketing, we have to talk in the common language that these people are living and breathing every day. You know, what are we solving for the customer? Because that's, again, important when you're doing this demand generation, is actually winning the hearts and minds of the audience by understanding very clearly what they are trying to achieve, what keeps them up at night. And if you can talk in that common language, you'll find that there's greater success in them engaging with you. And it's really, really important to really spend some time understanding those personas, because if you can do that, I've always found in sales particularly, that if you are able to answer questions before the question is answered, it gives you that elevated gravitas, that you are a real subject matter expert, someone that they can trust. Then the question is, right, I've defined my market. I know who my personas are. How do I go after them? You know, I've come from my heritage many, many years ago was telemarketing and hitting those phones and dialing the numbers. I remember many years ago in when I used to sell advertising, we used to go through all the local rags. And the easiest people to sell to were the ones that actually put a picture of themselves in the adverts, because they enjoy talking about themselves. But it's a different world now. You know, we live in a digital world. And what's really important around demand generation is, in a graceful and respectful way, sewing ourselves into people's digital lives without being too flamboyant, you know, and actually being very respectful of their own private area when they're online. And how do we do that? So I'm vehemently against telemarketing. I don't like it. I really don't like it. And actually, there's some many, many more graceful ways of doing that in today's world. You know, we're at this tipping point now where technology has become so pervasive and so intelligent that we can really use to good use things like bots. And now I've seen used to really good effect LinkedIn bots. I don't know if any of the audience who are listening to this have experienced any of that. But there's some very cool tools that will allow you to create filters within something like LinkedIn Sales Navigator. You create your filter of who your market is, and you can create a bot to start conversations with those people that you don't know about today or you're not connected with today, and start a conversation with them to get them to really start understanding your brand, your messaging, and consuming your content, but fully, fully automated. I'll give you an example, because, you know, it's quite a sweeping statement, but probably everyone on this call uses LinkedIn. Anyone listens to this podcast is using LinkedIn, and they'll see that they'll get daily emails saying, "Hi, I read your profile with great interest. It would be great to connect." And, you know, flattery is everything and people tend to connect. And the way the LinkedIn algorithm works is that the person that you've most recently connected with or most recently interacted with, their content gets surfaced up first on your LinkedIn feed. So what's really important to do is to connect with as many people as you can and start serving them up content that is relative to their roles. So we would typically do that through white papers, thought leadership pieces, where we'll connect with the people. So if we're talking about the gambling industry, you know, we're solving a problem around responsible gambling is one of our offerings. Mm-hmm. So we'll say, you know, we've produced a white paper on how there is a paradigm shift within responsible gambling and how operators, casinos, are protecting their players. Would you be interested in receiving a copy? They'll then receive a copy. We send that to them fully automated. So at this point, we haven't had any human interaction. This is all fully automated. And these people start consuming their content. And like with any good, mature marketing cycle, you will then start putting through a nurture where you'll then, once they've downloaded one piece of content, you'll start serving them up additional pieces of content. So that could be in order, you know, the first is a white paper thought leadership piece. The second piece is a case study on a customer who's been through that journey. And the third thing is, you know, how could you embrace this, this new opportunity for your own casino? And what we found is that if you do that really, really intelligently and spend time thinking about who you're talking to, more often than not, you will end up starting to get inbound activity. And this is a secret sauce that not many businesses are able to achieve. You know, they spend lots of money on their website. They do lots of social postings, but very few people actually get inbound activity. If you do it correctly, where you targeting the market, you're doing it in an automated fashion, you're talking in their language, and you're serving them up high quality content, you will get to a stage where you'll get people either emailing you or calling you saying, I know what you do, I know who you do it for, I know why you do it, I know how you do it, can you do it for me? And what happens is that there is many, many benefits of taking that route. I guess from a sales perspective, what's really important is that the sales cycles tend to be much quicker. You're not having that first phone call where you're doing six or seven or, heaven forbid, more slides about the company, because you've already done that. And those people have done that self-learning before they've even got to you. And you'll find that you get a really, really mature conversation on that very first call. I specifically remember one incident where we had a phone call for a company that we went through that journey. And on our first phone call, they had seven people from their side, from Houston to Paris to London and New York, all on that first phone call. And it turned out to be what we called at the time the $1 million baby, which was, it turned into $1 million worth of professional services order from a completely automated sales function. So for me, it's really about, just to frame everything, it's about really understanding who you're talking to, why you're talking to them, what language do you use, being respectful of their personal space. And what I mean by that, just to double click on that personal space, you know, my pet hate is someone will connect with me on LinkedIn and then within 2 minutes I'm getting an email saying I'd love to line up a call with you. You know, that's very passe. It's not good show, and for me it's a race to how quickly can I unconnect with them. So if you can spend that time really understanding your audience, using clever tools to do that, you will end up get into a situation where you will turn from an outbound sales organization to an inbound sales organization. And then your job as the business is to then have someone internally, maybe a sales development rep, who can nurture those opportunities to answer those questions, apply some bank qualification. Are they the right customer that we'd want to do business with? And really qualify them in or out. And if they're in, then you pass them on to the salespeople and they will then have a mature conversation with them, which more than likely will turn into revenue. And we've seen that if you do that well, that you could achieve anywhere between 3 and 4 out of every inbound inquiry turns into a customer. But it goes beyond that. You know, demand generation is not just about net new customers. It's around using that same methodology continually to wow, to delight your customers. Because what a lot of companies do is if they manage to crack the secret sauce of getting the customers, is they forget that the easiest people to sell to are your existing customers. So there has to be this bimodal approach of using the sales and the marketing tactics to win new customers, but equally using the same disciplines, if not more, to delight and continually nurture your existing customers. And that's not just from a revenue perspective, but also from a satisfaction perspective. People want to love brands. People buy from brands that they trust. And if you keep putting out articles that speak in their language, speaking in that are addressing problems that they are dealing with every day, that for me is the secret sauce. And we've been doing that really successfully. And I sit on the board of 6 technology companies. We've done it all. Even last week, there's a company that I deal with in Newcastle, who I'm very proud of, called HTG. They've had a website for a number of years. We redid the website. We really spent some time looking at who they're talking to. The website went live last Thursday. And on Friday, we got our first ever inbound inquiry. And that was someone who is exactly the target market that we wanted, the right persona. The challenge that they were experiencing is exactly something that we can resolve for them. The challenge was that particular company was based in Ghana, but we live in a digital world and we can deliver these things remotely. But the fact of the matter is that because we spent all of that time, we unlocked what seemed to be that black magic. And we can turn that into revenue. The one thing that I will say, which is really, really important, and I've said this in a previous podcast, is I've written books on marketing, checkbooks, because you can get this wrong and spend a lot of money in doing it. The way that the tools are designed today, net new customer acquisition does not have to be expensive. You know, I remember the days where we were spending 10 to 12% of revenue on marketing. In some of the companies I'm dealing with, if I look at Future Anthem, the gambling company, we're spending 2% of revenue on marketing. And that gives us some really, really incredible tooling that has great effect. And I can outperform any telemarketing team with 0 staff. Just that initial upfront investment and building out those tools, creating those journeys, really articulating that messaging really, really well. So my advice to the audience today is just think about who you're selling, why they're buying from you, where do they hang out, what's the messages that they want, how can I reach them at scale, how can I build out this pipeline, you know, how can I fill up this, hopefully everyone on this call is familiar with the top of funnel, middle of funnel and bottom of funnel, how can I fill that tofu, that top of funnel, how can I fill it up and nurture those people through all the way to the bottom where we get to a point where they're ready to engage with us and they're people that we want to do business with. And all of this can be achieved at low cost, highly effective, and your return on investment on all of the marketing that you've done will really come to bear.
Mitchell Feldman, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our third demand generation expert is the Director of Marketing at Casey & Architecture Interior Design and Planning, Lisa Higgins. Lisa, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Oh my goodness. Thanks, Dave. Yes, thanks for having me. Really great to be here. So I wanted to start out by talking about defining what is demand generation, because I think there's a lot of confusion around what that actually is. So I consider it this multi-channel approach to creating demand for your products and services. And it's all about capturing leads at the top of your funnel and then nurturing those leads through the buyer journey. I think a lot of people historically, perhaps, and I'm guilty of this, have thought of demand generation as simply being lead generation, but it's much more holistic than that. And it requires sometimes efforts by entire marketing departments to really kind of get this right. So I'm going to go out on the limb and say, demand generation today is really just fabulous marketing. You know the bold statement that every marketer is a content marketer nowadays. Well, I feel like every successful marketing department should really be, won't be successful without getting demand generation right. So, but there's a few other misconceptions that I think, you know, we should really address in this monologue. The second misconception is the shape of the buyer journey. You know, I think nowadays, we as marketers, we talk about the buyer journey as if it's this inverted pyramid. It's this kind of perfect thing with like three or four stages but in reality, it's not the case, especially in complex B2B environments. You know, the buyer journey is really, okay, it starts with lead generation at the top, and awareness, that's fine. But then it gets really crazy. It kind of becomes this kind of chaotic roller coaster ride where buyers get on and off your roller coaster whenever they feel like. And that's something that I think we just don't really know how to properly handle these days as marketers. Okay, yes, we've got all this amazing technology. We've got so much data to hand, but in reality, what's really driving that kind of roller coaster ride is how difficult it is for buyers to make decisions these days. And I think this kind of rolls nicely into my next misconception, which is, and I'm just going to start with a stat here. So, and this is pre-COVID. So Gartner found in their 2019 buyer survey that 77% of buyers reported their latest purchase to have been very complex or difficult. So I know that these are pre-COVID stats, fine. But I don't think this has actually changed. The typical buying group or buying committee involves 6 to 10 decision makers. And that is incredibly like a huge amount of stakeholders for one buyer to have to manage. And I think as marketers, we don't necessarily spend enough time breaking down who is in or understanding who is in that buyer group and then enabling the core buyer to successfully manage that group in order to gain the sale or gain them as a customer. So I think there's a little bit more, there's a bit of a misconception there that the buyer is just the buyer of one, but actually it's a buyer, there's many. And we should spend a little bit more time getting under the skin of the problems that particular, the main client might have in trying to get your solution over the line. The fourth misconception is that demand generation happens online only. But in the same survey, Gartner reported that 18% of the buyer's time is spent researching independently offline. Now, again, these are pre-COVID stats. This might have changed, but we're probably going to go back to some sort of kind of pre-COVID normal. And I think there's still a place for traditional media in that 18% kind of span. To reach buyers, to kind of monopolize, take advantage of that 18% of research they're doing offline by themselves. Quite possibly that is, you know, not just through print media, but it could also just simply be one thing to ask you. Well, it also tells me that people are actually downloading all those reports and white papers that we're putting out there. The key thing is to make sure that you put out a good one. Because I can guarantee you, they're not sitting in front of their laptop, printing it off immediately and running into their, you know, and reading it whilst, I don't know, immediately afterwards. They're going to come back to it, and they're only going to come back to the good ones. All right. So the next thing I want to talk about are the steps to planning your approach to demand generation. You know, despite the oversaturation of content in the market, and the likely content paralysis that some might be feeling at the moment, I don't think demand generation is slowing down. It's obviously picking up. And I think it's really important to get, there's six key steps that you need to kind of take in order to be successful in the realm of demand generation. For me, it starts with defining your proposition and story. So what that means is, you know, going back to understanding who your buyer is and your buying group, but what are their pain points? What are their buying triggers? What makes your proposition unique? What do you have in your toolkit that will influence the buying decision and make buyers want to choose your solution over everybody else's? You really need to get your proposition storyboard right in order to create that kind of foundation before you move on to any, you know, planning any content or planning out your channels or planning out anything else. And I just want to give a shout out to the Get to Growth website developed by John Webb. who's the managing director of demand generation at Autavia. He's got some great templates out there on the Get to Growth website. Download the proposition storyboard. You know, I've done it. I've tailored it a little bit to every situation that I've been in, but it's a great, great place to start. So then once you've got your proposition storyboard, you know, ready to go, and you've got clarity around, you know, everything regarding your buyer. I mean, some call it persona development. I don't really like the word persona development. I prefer to think of it more about the, like, the buyer and the buyer decision making, and perhaps even breaking it down into audiences, because of this whole buyer group scenario and how complex it is. But then you really need to get your inbound marketing strategy right. So this is all about driving leads to your wide open funnel. This means providing content in the right channels that will really, like, pull your buyers into the top of your funnel. And this isn't just about creating awareness, but going one step further towards also enabling your customer to take action effectively. I think we've heard quite a bit already about how great content marketing in previous podcasts, how to do great content marketing in previous podcasts. So I don't really want to rehash old things here, but just to summarize, this is not about a bunch of sales messages out there. Instead, it's all about education and building trust with your brand. And this means providing tools and information that simplifies the buying process for your buyer, including influencing and convincing their wider buying group. This means going back to your proposition storyboard. You need to look at each influencer in your buying group and identifying their needs and creating tailored content that will really, that will help get the decision over the line. A typical content plan includes a mixture of thought leadership, articles, blogs, case studies, project stories, podcasts, eBooks, toolkits. I mean, you name it, it's there. You're going to be producing a ton of content, and it doesn't just end at inbound marketing. There's a lot more content to come as I move through the different stages of the buyer journey and what it means to get demand generation right. I mean, this is why it involves entire marketing departments. It's not the power of one, it's the power of many that are going to make demand generation work for your organization. So alongside your content, you need a capture plan, because there's no point creating all this demand for your products and services and driving all these, you know, loads and loads of buyers to your website unless you've got a way to capture their details. And you know, I think I've probably been guilty, or thought my ideas on this have kind of morphed over the years of doing this. You know, we started out putting forms at the very first engagement that we had on our website, didn't we, Dave? Forms. You can't get this report until you fill out my form. And then once we saw how great this was, we then gated absolutely everything. Luckily, technology is far more sophisticated now, so that you only have to gate one thing, and then the technology will remember who that person or buyer is, so that when they come back to download something else, it'll be recorded. Thank God for that, because I am so tired of having to gate everything that's out there. Because of that experience, my thinking was to then only gate content that was more at the bottom of the funnel to make sure that our leads were more qualified before we took on their information, because I ended up in this situation where I was managing hundreds and hundreds of leads, and I didn't know how qualified they were. So my opinion of this has now changed, given where we are on technology and how much more effective it is in terms of managing leads and gating. I now think we should be gating, you know, your best piece of content at the top. And if it is at the start of the journey, so be it, because that is when you, without that gate, without that information, you just don't know anything. You can't capture anything else about the individual. So the sooner you can find that out, the better, I think. And then it's all about sending them more relevant content. So if you don't know who they are, you can't define their preferences, and you can't send them more, you know, more tailored content. You can't nurture them through the buyer journey any further. I mean, yes, you could do retargeting and You can send, but it really helps to actually know who they are. There's only so long you can really send them content to without like actually understanding where they sit within your storyboard. So going back to what I was saying about this kind of step three, it's all about the capture plan. And I think I've probably covered that off. I tend to use the hub and spoke framework to help me map out my capture plan. I do this per persona, and I look across all the different channels per different topic or campaign. But I do find the hub and spoke model really helps to kind of frame my thinking on this. So the fourth step it really depends on where your organization is and the maturity of CRM and data, but it is to get your CRM and data sorted out. I've lived in worlds without a CRM system integrated with channels, and a world where the CRM system was integrated with key channels, and what a difference this makes. The manual labor this removes and the instant insight you can glean is amazing. It just makes your job so much easier. If you can't achieve this, you really need to make sure you've got the resources aligned to managing the leads as they come in. Not everybody's going to have the luxury of this amazing CRM system and up-to-date data. Let's face it, it's just where we are. But that's okay. You just need a way to manage that. So whether that's leads coming in to be qualified via over the phone, and I think nowadays a phone call is actually maybe a nice thing, because everybody is everybody is so tired of digital communications. You know, if you can get a phone number and pick up the phone and phone somebody and have a conversation, your brand might just stand out right now. So that's something in my past life I probably would never have done, but given where we are today, I think it's actually a really good idea. So moving on, the fifth step. This is probably the most important step, and I probably should have started with this step, but it's about harmonizing your sales or business development team with your marketing effort. They need to understand the buyer journey you are driving. They need to be a part of defining that buyer journey. They need to understand all of the engagement points in that journey that you're mapping out, and the content and the messaging that you're sending alongside each one of the, or to support and drive each the step that the buyers are taking through the buyer journey. And they might need help scripting engagements. They're going to need their own materials. This is about making sure the handover is appropriate. It might not even be a handover. It might be that you collaborate through the entire process of demand generation within your organization. Every single organization is different. This is going to look, it's not going to be the same from, you know, one to the other. And you need to work out what works best for you and your business development team. And I'm assuming I'm speaking to marketers here. So the sixth step, and I'm sure there's many other steps, but this is the sixth one that I think is really one of the last ones that I think is really important. It's all about testing, 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 and more testing. I think in my, again, this has like evolved over the years, my experience in this, and now it really is like at the front and foremost of what we should be doing. We should always be analyzing the data and refining our approach and optimizing our approach based on what our data is telling us. So it could be, you know, you're getting 99% of your traffic from mobile versus the 1% coming in from desktop. Okay, how can you optimize that mobile experience in order to, minimize the drop-offs that you're getting through the next stage of your buyer journey? And what is that, does the next step really involve mobile, or is the next step actually something else? So how can you get them from mobile into that something else quicker? There's loads of other interactions you should be testing, but let's just one example. It's just thank you for having me. I mean, that's probably enough on demand generation for today. I'm sure everybody's probably tired of listening to me talk right now. So if you're still listening, thank you for making it through to the end of my monologue on demand generation. You can tell I'm very passionate about this subject. And good luck in all your demand generation endeavors. I hope my experiences have helped you in your daily working life.
Lise, it's so good to hear from you. Thanks a lot for joining us today. Cheers.
Okay.
Our next demand generation expert is the CEO and founder of Radiate B2B, Riaz Kanani. Riaz, welcome to the podcast and over to you.
Thank you, Dave. Really good to be here, as always. I was thinking about what I would focus on today when it came to demand generation. It's been around for a while, but as we all know with marketing, the definitions of words change continuously. They have this tendency to expand. And demand gen, in some ways, is the most broadest of all the marketing terms, in that it now encompasses almost every aspect of marketing. So I'm going to start there because I think it's worthwhile starting with that definition. I mean, obviously, traditionally, demand gen was around this idea of, you know, the literal definition, right, and generating demand. But it's a pretty big miracle if you're a marketer today to go and do a one-off demand gen campaign and suddenly it meets all your goals, right? It just doesn't happen. The reality for all of us is that you need coordinated, multi-channel marketing programs that come together and reinforce each other to create that demand generation. Now, what's been really interesting for me, so for those of you that don't know, Radiate B2B is an ABM marketing platform. And so for the last, must be 5 years now, I've been heavily focused on the account-based marketing side of things. And what has been really interesting is, obviously ABM, very much enterprise focused around winning enterprise deals, is that as marketers became more mature with their ABM programs, it started to move back into demand generation a little bit. Now, I'm going to caveat that because there is a big problem, in my view, with saying ABM is demand generation, because it is in the broadest sense, certainly the definition of demand generation, you can say ABM falls inside it, but how you go about it is very different. And if I think about the companies that we talk to day in, day out about account-based marketing, you know, the guys that are coming at this early on, and they're probably just starting with ABM, you know, you've basically got two camps. You've got the group of people who will come at this from a demand gen thinking approach, where they're going after the many companies. And they're still very much focused on, well, what's the conversion rate? What's, you know, how many leads are we going to generate, in effect, right? And of course, ABM is not really about that. It's about starting with who the companies are, what the list looks like, and then looking to see and nurture those companies through to close and building a relationship with it. The other group starts with one-to-one, right? This idea of taking a single company or a small number of single companies and tailoring campaigns to them. And so they're coming at ABM from the other angle. And in those situations, what we often see is, of course, the trickiness of making sure you pick the right few companies. But in both those scenarios, I won't dwell on that because this isn't a really session about ABM too much. I want to keep it on demand generation. So if we take a look at those two groups, what often happens is the guys and girls going after that small group of companies will start to expand. They'll start to do clusters of companies. They'll start to do one to many, but they've come at it from this quality approach. And so they come at the lists from that qualitative nature. And they, you know, you've always in ABM are putting the company at the center. And so you start to think about, well, okay, how do I create demand in this type of company or that type of company? And suddenly it starts to infect the thinking of your demand generation programs. Because of course, when you start to target those thousands of companies, you start to you start to move into the realms of demand generation. The difference, and this is the key difference, is that with a demand generation program, if you follow best practice and you go through all the steps, you end up with something that looks very like an ABM program, but it often starts and ends in marketing. That's the first key difference, right? We all know that an enterprise sale really doesn't stop with when sales picks it up. It's a long deal. It's something that actually marketing can really support sales with. So that's the first big difference. The second big difference is that when you work from an ABM perspective, you start with that prospect, that company, and that's where you're starting. When you're looking for basically definitions around that ideal customer profile, that makes you think about it's this list of companies. With a demand gen approach, it's possible to get there, but you often don't, because you often start to think about it, well, it's this market, I need to go and attack this market, I don't really know who's in there, but you know, the companies in this group are the right type of company, so we'll put advertising or marketing to this group. And of course what falls out will be a big range of companies that actually a lot of wouldn't have ever made it into your ABM program in the first place. I'm going to go full circle back as to why that's actually important, why you want to get the companies that you would have come up with in the list more than you want this bigger range of companies where the companies you wouldn't have put in the list. And that's because the most finite resource you have in a business in terms of closing deals is your sales team. And they take a lot of time closing these enterprise level deals. If you put a company into the sales team, which is the wrong type of company, you're effectively wasting resource. You're effectively not closing the right deals. They won't stay with you as longer. The deal size won't be as big, et cetera, et cetera. So that's what's really interesting to me, is that as more companies have matured in the ABM space, they're starting to integrate it much more closely into demand gen, which as a result is leading to conversation in the marketplace really this year for the first time, in my view, properly, that ABM is part of demand gen. And as I say, I'll repeat what I said right at the very beginning, it is different. So if you're doing demand gen today and not doing ABM, be wary of just going, I'm doing ABM, because there's a set path you have to work through. There's work you have to do to get there. It's not a silver bullet. That was the major part of demand generation that I wanted to talk about. But there's a second big impact on demand generation in the next 12 months that I think is worth covering off, because of course, demand generation, the very first step of demand generation, is all about awareness. It's all about getting yourself in front of those right companies. And there's a big change happening for marketers over the next 12 months. It actually started a couple of years ago, and I think its impact is going to be much bigger. So a couple of years ago, we saw Safari and we saw Firefox switch off third-party cookies. Now, for those that are of a technical bent, you'll know that that is exactly how we identify and target people on the internet. So when you do an industry-wide campaign, you are using those third-party cookies to reach those people. And when those two browsers switched off third-party cookies, we immediately saw a 30% drop in reach. So if you were going after, let's say you're going after the retail industry, and I don't know if this is accurate or not, I'm making it up, but let's say ASOS, they have Macs across the organization and they're using the Safari browser. Well, it doesn't matter that ASOS is a retailer. You will not reach them with any cookie targeted campaign that way. Now, why is this important? Because of course, in the UK especially, Chrome is somewhere between 80 and 90% of the audience. So the big problem is Google Chrome is switching off third-party cookies May next year. And so suddenly you're in a situation where those third-party cookies that existed before are not going to exist post that situation. And so the way you advertise in a demand generation campaign is going to change. And given we are a year out from that, planning for that, I think, is something for anyone in demand generation should be thinking about today. And so, you know, there are a bunch of options there, and a bunch of things that are happening. And so I'm going to keep it really short and keep it down to two options that you have to go for. One is to go for contextual advertising. It's the traditional way that you did things before third-party cookies really came about, which is placing your advertising in places where your audience is likely to turn up, right? A form of that is actually how we do things. We target companies very specifically. We're still able to identify the company, and then we are able to place the advert in context and not show and not use any cookies at all. The second way is to use something that Google is going to create to replace it, which is called FLOC. And so it's FLOC. It's being tested at the moment. And what it will do is create segments on your browser as a consumer. Unsurprisingly, this is primarily being looked at from a consumer standpoint today. Kelsa, please. But it'll create segments on your local browser that then advertisers will be able to target. And the reason I flag this is that if you are doing these sorts of advertising campaigns, it's something to keep an eye on, because by the end of this year, decisions will be made that will impact on your campaigns. That's me.
Ominous place to end. Riaz Kanani, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And that's all for this episode of the Business Marketing Club podcast. Thanks to my guests, Michael Brazier, Mitchell Feldman, Lisa Higgins, and Riaz Kanani. And thanks to our technical team from Through the Eye of Scott Jackson, Andrew Gratian, Alex Horn, and Josh Bench. Most of all, though, thanks to you for listening. Do rate or review us if you can, and email me at davestevensnow@gmail.com if you'd like to be a speaker or offer feedback. There's more where this came from. Just go to businessmarketingclub.org.uk, and I hope to see you again. Thanks for listening.